as I sat in the window last evening, a letterman brought it to me, a little gilt edge invitation saying, Gilhooly, come over for tea. Well, I knew that the Fogarty sent it, so I went just for old friendship's sake, and the first thing they gave me to tackle was a slice of Miss Fogarty's cake. There were plums and prunes and cherries, citrons and raisins and cinnamon too. There was nutmeg cloves and berries, and a crust that was nailed with glue. There were caraway seeds in abundance, that woke up a fine stomach ache. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of his Fogarty's Christmas cake. Miss Mulligan wanted to try it, but really it wasn't no use, for we walked in it over an hour and we couldn't get none of it loose. Till Murphy came in with a hatchet and Kelly came in with a saw. This cake was enough be the powers to paralyze any man's jaw. There were plums and prunes and cherries, citrons and raisins and cinnamon too. There was nutmeg cloves and berries, and a crust that was nailing with glue. There were caraway seeds in abundance, sure to'd work up a fine stomach ache. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake. Fogarty, proud as a peacock, kept smiling and blinking away, till she tripped over Flanagan's brogans and she spilt the home brew in her tay. I get hooly, she says, you're not hating, try a little bit more for my sake. I know, Miss Fogarty, says I, for I've had quite enough of your cake. There were plums and prunes and cherries, citrons and raisins and cinnamon too. There was nutmeg cloves and berries, and a crust that was nailed with glue. There were caraway seeds in abundance, sure to work up a feast to make ache. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake. McNulty was took with the colic, Maloney's a pain in his head, O'Connell lay down on the sofa and he swore that he wished he was dead. Miss Bailey went into hysterics and there she did wiggle and shake, and everyone swore they were poisoned from eating Miss Fogarty's cake. There were plums and prunes and cherries, citrons and raisins and cinnamon too. There was nutmeg cloves and berries, and a crust that was nailed with glue. There were caraway seeds in abundance, sure to dwarf up a fine stomach ache. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake. There were plums and prunes and cherries, citrons and raisins and cinnamon too. There was nutmeg cloves and berries, and a crust that was nailed with glue. There were caraway seeds in abundance, sure to dwarf up a fine stomach ache. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake. It would kill a man twice at the rate and a slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake.
So, a little late for Christmas, but a fun way to start the show. This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Good afternoon. You heard the group called Bohola from their CD called Bohohohola. I think I didn't have too many of those hoes in there, maybe. Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake and then a trip to the cottage snuck in there as well, I believe.
Yeah, it was the instrumental piece in the middle.
And the voice that you probably didn't hear just now speaking, because I didn't have his mic on, is Jimmy Keen, who is the piano accordionist of Bohola, and then Pat Broders is the guitarist. And I think that I heard a bass player in there.
Yeah.
Your own Larry Gray.
Our own Larry Gray. Our own, meaning the University of Illinois jazz bass professor. All three of these guys, Pat, Jimmy, and Larry, based in Chicago.
Correct.
Although, as you can tell from accents, as you hear the voices of Jimmy and Pat, at least somewhere by way of Ireland. Although you're
true.
British, London born
Irish parents. Through no fault of my own.
Well, we can't blame our parents for everything. Or I suppose you can blame your parents for that. Although probably not their fault they were born there.
No, actually, my parents were born in Ireland. My father was from Connemara in Galway. My mother's from Kerry. And they moved over to England to work in the 50s and got married there. And I was born there, lived there for a few years, then Ireland for a few years, and then came out to Chicago.
So quite a mix-up of accents there.
Yeah, and I grew up in the Irish community as well in Chicago since I was six or seven. So.
So you've been in Chicago then the better part of your life?
6 years.
This is going to be one of those interviews where I can tell that I'm not sure whether I should believe a thing that anybody says.
I'm big for my age.
Yeah. Well, the reason that Jimmy Keen and Pat Broders are here is that Bohola is playing tonight on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. It's the first concert of 2013 on that series at the Independent Media Center on South Broadway Avenue. It's in the former post office building. Well, the post office is still there, but it's not their building for quite some time now, in downtown Urbana. And the show starts at 8 o'clock, and you can get more information at pipers-hut.com. But, of course, you can stick around and listen to the conversation here on Live and Local. Bohola, according to Wikipedia, is a tiny, tiny, tiny hamlet somewhere in Ireland. Is that where you got the name?
It's in Mayo.
In County Mayo.
County Mayo, in the west of Ireland, yes. It's the name of a town, and there were many musicians in Chicago from Mayo, and a handful were actually from the town and surrounding area of Bohola. And there was also a jig, a pretty well-known jig called the Bohola Jig, and we just stuck with the name. We just used the name Bohola. It was easy to pronounce, and it looked Irish, and, you know.
And we couldn't come up with a better one. So.
Well, that's usually what it comes down to.
Someone else was using the chieftain, so yeah. It was like.
And it's spelled, by the way, anybody wants to know, B-O-H-O-L-A. You typically don't use a capital B for some reason.
Well, because it's not really the place, and it's, yeah, just. Maybe like a backwards E.E. Cummings type of...
Have you been to the place?
I have been in Bohola, yes.
What's it like?
Small.
Yeah, there was a church and three pubs. Now
245 people or something like that.
Yeah, there's two pubs and a church now, and there might only be one pub and a church now.
Well, there's probably some sort of housing estate there, too, now that nobody lives in, since everybody built houses in all these places in Ireland during the Celtic Tiger, but still a small village, I think.
And do they have much of a music tradition?
As far as you know? There were a few, yeah. There was two that I knew from Bohola. It was Martin Burns, an accordion player in Chicago, and Jimmy Neary. He was outside of Bohola, and he was a great fiddle player. And his wife, Eleanor K. Neary, was a great pianist and playing traditional Irish music. And they were really active until their deaths in the 80s. They both played in the World's Fair and... I think it was 1932 in Chicago. So
this is a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
It is, and you know, they lived to a good old age, you know, and they helped spread music around, not only in Chicago, but around the world, because, you know, they had recorded some 78s and stuff. And Eleanor herself, Jimmy's wife, was one of the first pianists to play melodies, reels and jigs and hornpipes and everything like that.
Instead of as an accompanying instrument.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, she couldn't really accompany tunes, which was funny. But she could, you know, she could play the tunes. And she had a great left hand, but if she was just backing you, forget it. She'd be playing, she'd back and play the tune at the same time, but not just bass chord stuff.
Well, you know, it was actually just recently that I even learned that the piano was a traditional accompanying instrument for Irish music. I heard somebody doing it, and I thought, that doesn't sound like it belongs there. And I was really just showing my own ignorance about that. But the guitar... Or the instrument you play, I said guitar, I think.
Looks like a guitar, but it's not.
But it's a, do you say bizarre, buzar?
Buzar would be the name that I've heard put on it. Gazooki, somebody calls them gazooki.
Gazooki, well, yeah. I like that one.
Yeah.
It's a combination of guitar and bouzouki. I'm looking at a picture here, assuming, is this the one you carry around generally?
I have a different one now, but same general idea.
I mean, mostly it looks different, at least from this picture, the top of it, whatever you call it.
The headstock, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So the neck and the headstock are obviously different because it's a narrower, it's like a big mandolin as far as the string setup is concerned, so you got four courses of double strings.
Tuned in octaves?
No, tuned together.
Oh, they are?
Mm.
Well, let's see. Here we go again.
So each pair of strings is the same.
So what is the... why two? Why not just one, then?
You get a natural chorusing effect with the double string, like a 12-string guitar, the way that would sound.
And the advantage of the combination of the guitar,
the body, the body style gives you much more resonance and a deeper tone. So it actually it sits better if there is no guitar, which we'd never had a guitar player really. Kath Eggerson played with us for a while, which basically on songs. So and with a guitar, I would use a slightly different. I'd use a regular style bouzouki because it wouldn't get in the way frequency wise of a guitar. Whereas that would be more crossing into the guitar territory as far as the low end is concerned. So it's a bigger sound basically.
So you sometimes will use a bouzouki?
A regular shaped, the teardrops, what everybody would think of as an Irish flatback bouzouki, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, sometimes.
You should explain the difference because it's all evolved out of the Greek style bouzouki, which is, I think, three strings, right?
Well, there's several different styles. Like there's a six string bouzouki from Greece. It's got three courses of two. And then they have a four string one too. But they had whole orchestras of them too. So they had
different sizes, probably.
Exactly.
Small,
it'd be like the mandolin size up through bass bouzoukis, like big honking bass bouzoukis. And they'd have all these orchestras.
And so the body of it usually fairly deep.
It was like a nude. It was like what do they call those type of bodies?
A lute.
Like an armadillo shell.
Yeah.
Bowlback.
Yeah, it's got it looks like you could put quite a lot into it.
Yes,
and
you could. Yeah.
Drink out of it, I suppose, if you took the top off.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Exactly, yeah. But they're very awkward to hold because of the shape. I had one for a while. My first bouzouki was a regular bowl shape.
Well, let's give a listen to a track from the self-titled CD by Bohola, Jimmy Keane and Pat Broders, which is the opening track. It has two songs. Well, a song and a tune, I guess.
Yes.
January Man and Down the Dune. Hmm. Are these, these are somebody's compositions as opposed to traditional tunes.
Well, I wrote the reel Down the Dune for a great friend of ours who was killed 11 years ago now, Gwen Sale, a girl from Scotland, who's married to Dennis Cahill, a great guitar player in Chicago, plays with Martin Hayes, and I've been playing with Dennis for years as Pat as well, and so it was a tune, the song January Man, which is actually appropriate now, it's for this time of the year, was one of Gwen's favorite songs, so we decided to record that, and then I wrote the tune Down the Dune in memory of her her funeral. We brought her ashes back to Scotland, and her two kids from a previous marriage, we were on top of this place, a dune or a hill outside of her house. We took her kids and Dennis took her urn and let it roll down the hill, and then her two kids went running and rolling after it. And so it was one of the best funerals, if there's such a thing, that I was ever at. So I wrote the tune Down the Dune.
But spelled it D-O-O-N.
That's how they spell it. Yeah,
it is
Scottish
how they spell
I think it's hill. Scottish for hill.
Yeah. Also, we would spell it D-U-N-E, and I guess it's somewhat similar. Without the sand.
Here,
a dune D-U-N-E would have a lot of sand in it.
Yeah, no, there's no sand in this.
It's like a hill, more than that.
A big hill, yeah.
There'd be grass and stuff on it.
January Man and Down the Dune. Dave Golder, is that how I say it? Goulder?
Goulder. Wrote the song, yeah, school teacher.
Wrote January Man and then Jimmy Keane's tune, Down the Dune. Bohola, who are going to be at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana tonight at 8 o'clock on the Piper's Hut Concert Series. You're listening to Live and Local.
The road in woolen coat and boots of leather. February man still shakes the snow from off his hair and blows his hands. Man of March, he sees the spring and wonders what the year will bring and hopes for better weather. Through April rains, the man comes down to watch the birds come in to share the summer. The man of May stands very still, watching the children dance away the day. In June, the man inside the man is young and wants to lend a hand. and grins at each new color. And in July, the man in cotton shirt, he sits and thinks and being idle. The August man in thousands take the road to watch the sea and find the sun. September man is standing near to saddle up another year. And not to miss his bright love. The man of new October takes the reins and early frost is on his shoulder. Poor November man sees fire and rain and snow and mist and wintry gale. December man looks through the snow to let 11 brothers know they're all a little older. And the January man comes around again in woolen coat and boots of leather. Take another turn and walk along the icy road he knows so well. For the January man is here for starting each and every year along the road forever. Thank you.
We heard a song and a tune, January Man, written by Dave Goulder, and Down the Dune, written by Jimmy Keane, who is one of the performers from that CD, who are the duo Bohola, Jimmy Keane on accordion and Pat Broders on guitar. Well, I'm going to keep saying that and
that's
apologize
fine.
In advance. The Buzar looks mostly like a guitar, but sounds more like a bouzouki, I guess. And also Pat doing the vocals. Have you always played this music?
I started playing when I was about 7 or 8 years old, so that would be yes.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It was always around the house. I remember being very, very young, and my father played, so friends of his coming into the house and playing while I was upstairs in bed.
And what did he play?
My father played a whistle, and he sang and he danced and told stories and all sorts of stuff. He wasn't professional at it, but he could have been, I suppose.
But the traditional music in the house from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so did you ever branch out into all the things that the average American kid does anyway? You know, you're going to break out your guitar and play rock and roll or pop music?
I went through a couple of phases. I never actually, I played in a blues band for about 5 years in Dublin. That was sort of fun. Called the International Blues Band.
And how common are the blues in Ireland?
Pretty common. Well, in Dublin, I would say, anyway, at the time, there was... Yeah, there were rock and roll and all was pretty common. Well, of course, you had, Thin Lizzy came out of Dublin, so...
Boomtown Rats.
That was later, though. Yeah. What was the other group? Carrigdoon. What were they called? Horslips.
Horslips.
They would have been, like, a crossover band. Yeah, these were all bands of people in the States... They're getting to be more widely known now, actually, than they were back when they were big and at home. Rory Gallagher was from Ireland, so he was. I used to go see him quite a bit in the National Stadium. So that would have been a big... I love that sort of music, though. Can't play it, but I love it.
The Horslips were one of the first bands to actually, with people who were actually trained in traditional instruments, who decided to... apply rock and roll to it, and they actually had a couple of hits here in the 70s.
Yeah,
from it. I think they were following the similar model as the some of the English folk rock groups, such as Steel Ice Band and Fairport Convention. So they were around the same time, maybe a few years earlier, and they were the Irish version of it. And they would actually take some traditional tunes and actually
did mandolins and whistles and all, and among bass and drums and electric guitars.
Yeah,
I know that's a sound that I've enjoyed from various Irish bands. You know, who are, you know, I guess you'd say more rock and roll bands, but they have that traditional element. And one of the I have to say, too, that one of the things I appreciate about most of the Irish bands that I've heard, which is not a great many, I'm afraid, is that, for lack of a better way to put it, they sing like men. And it just seems like...
Let's work on that one for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, so many pop and rock... male musicians, you'd think they were high, they sing like high tenors.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay.
And I was wondering, how they even, do they even do that, much less so many of them who do that?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I played a group yesterday who's also been on Dean's Piper's Hut series. Martine's group.
Oh, Martin de Kilga, the...
Fuchsia Band.
The Fuchsia Band. And I got to hear them at on the series, and you know, they do some nice four-part singing, but it's mostly just really vigorous male singing, you know, full-throated singing, the good baritone voice, and I like that. And I appreciate your voice in part for that, but also for its overall expression and so on.
Thank you.
Pat.
Well, anybody I listened to growing up singing would have been it's your I was going to say monkey see monkey do, but it's not exactly like that. But you know, you hear like Frank Hart or Liam Weldon sing. I mean, they'd raise the hair in the back of your head sometimes the way they'd sing. But you're right, it was just like full on, like, especially Liam Weldon was like incredible.
But also, I wouldn't say that there's a lot of the Irish singers don't necessarily sound like they're trained singers in any operatic sense,
no.
Or even, you know, you went to school to learn to sing, but the expression. It's all about the expression, I guess. When did you figure out that you had that going on? Or did somebody else figure it out and tell you?
you know, I started singing sort of by accident. I didn't plan on. I still don't class myself as a singer, but obviously I do sing. But I mean, when I moved to the States, there was more call for people to sing songs and play music, or play an instrument and play tunes and such. So, if I was playing with anybody and they wanted a song, they'd ask, you know, can you sing a song? And I'd sing a song. And I just came from that, really. So, but I enjoy singing. But I never ran away and sort of learned from singers or stuff like that. That happened later for me, where I started researching it a little bit more.
You mentioned, I guess, one who was a sort of an influence. Who are some other?
Frank Hart and Liam Weldon would be two of the main influences. I listened to some Shannos singers, Sean McDonagh and people like that. They'd be more traditional, very, very traditional, actually. It's on the company's Shannos singing. So
talk about that a little bit. I mean, we've talked about it on this show before.
Jimmy could talk about that. His father was
My dad was a Shannos singer. So, I mean, as I said, he was from Connemara, and so his first language was Irish, and he sang unaccompanied. Shannos basically means old style. And Nose would be old and Shauna style, or vice versa, one of the two. And
hang on, I got me English. Sorry, I'm from Dublin.
So it's very can be very nasally sounding. In fact, a lot of people actually say there's a lot of similarities between Shauna's singing and songs from the Middle East. It's very expressive, and that's singing in Irish, and then they use the same approach, even when they're singing in English, then they'll put curlicues and all these little things on, whereas someone else might just sing words straight.
Sort of ornamentation.
It's very highly evolved ornamentation. In fact, much the same as the music, sometimes it's actually the ornamentation that actually really makes the tune, as opposed to just the regular melody note, and the same applies for singing. And all those things actually came in and helped make Irish singing even more contemporary singing now within the tradition. They'll have some of those traits that they bring with them. Whereas, someone, if you just gave them, for example, if you gave a classically trained fiddle player, violinist, a sheet of Irish music, I mean, they would hit all of the notes, but you would tell right away that, oh, that's not Irish music, because it's all missing all the nuances and all that stuff that comes because it's really an oral tradition. And that's how most of the singers would have learned. And most musicians you learn by ear. And Dean can attest to this. I mean, you can read and stuff like that, but it's really not going to help you in the long run. It makes it easier to do certain things, but you have to kind of hear where it goes. And, you know, a lot of these songs and tunes, they're 300 years old. So they're around for a reason, because something must attract other people to be playing them. Otherwise, they would just fade away, you know.
So a lot of it is picking up the curly cues, as you call them.
Absolutely.
I mean, the vocal is not unlike the instrumental curly cues. So
they're very much the same.
Ornamentations and so on.
In piping, with Uilleann pipes especially, they say it's the closest instrument to the natural voice in Irish music, of course. So, but that would be relating back to the Shannos singing, that they make the same ornamentation as the voice would make, and as close to it as an instrument could.
So was it the instruments imitating the voice more than the other way around then? Or
it's like the chicken and the egg, which came first. I can't answer that. I would assume the singing came first, just because, you know,
we all have a voice.
Exactly.
And somebody had to invent an instrument.
So somebody had to invent an instrument, but the voice was always there. So.
And then there's a whole other tradition within, like an offshoot of the Shannos singing, like mouth music, where people actually do not play an instrument, but they didle or diddle the tunes. They vocalize the tunes.
Lilt.
I mean, lilting is probably the most appropriate term for it. So instead of, you know, playing a jig on a fiddle, they'll actually... You can't do any mouth music now at the moment.
No.
Okay. I was going to ask Pat to give a demonstration of it, you know. But it's... Just do a little bit.
Hi, diddle, diddle, the cat in the
village. No.
it's just lilting. I mean, it's everybody's heard it.
Not really.
Oh, God, let me see.
He's trying to force you.
Something like that.
A form of scat singing.
Very much so, yeah.
Except there's actually a tune. That's a hornpipe. What's it called? Murphy's or Dumfries or something like that?
Yeah, one of those.
I always am amazed that you all can pick out tunes because, you know, to my ear, actually sometimes when people string together a couple tunes and I always have to ask, so when did they change? Because, I mean, I've got a pretty good ear, but you have to get trained in a particular style of music. In fact, one of the things I really enjoyed about this particular CD, and just a reminder to folks listening that we're talking with the two gentlemen who are the duo Bohola, Jimmy Keen and Pat Broders, is that some of these are quite large sets, long sets. You have five or six tunes in some of them, and maybe a song in between, is that they are more distinct than I often hear when somebody does a set. You might do three tunes, and if you're not really listening carefully, you could not notice when they changed. But it's pretty hard to miss when these tunes change. And I like the different energy that it brings.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to do. Because, you know, otherwise you'll be playing... If you just play the one tune, it might last 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes, and that's it. So, and I think, you know, there's certain similarities and certain things that contrast and actually complement each other when putting sets together, you know, either thematically or musically or maybe just something as simple as a chord. But there's usually, I think tunes kind of flow into each other. I mean, you can get away with playing one tune as well, you know, and it stands by itself. But I suppose just to do something different.
It's sort of interesting, though, when you do string a set of tunes together and then actually sit back and listen to them and see how they actually go into each other. It's like... it's just interesting because you might come up with a set of tunes in your head and say, you know, we go from this and that doesn't sound right. Now musically it probably works going from a G chord, G key, a tune in G to a tune in D, that would probably work, but there's just something about it where it's not blending properly, just the tune itself.
In the actual performance of it.
The actual melodies don't mesh up properly. They work musically, and it's very hard. It's not something you can say, well, that clashes here, that clashes there. It's not like that. It's just a feeling more than anything else. Like the flow goes off between the two tunes. And when you pick the two tunes that are right for the individuals who are playing them, this flow will definitely continue through. There won't be any jarring effect melodically.
Well, we have a set of three here. And I wanted to be sure to play this from the CD because I really like the opening song, I guess. Lament for Limerick would be a song.
Yeah, it's an air, slow air.
Slow air. Was it a song?
You know, I don't know.
Well, what's the difference between a song and an air?
Song's got lyrics.
And this one, see, I'm forgetting because which one? Lament for Limerick has a lyric?
Well,
it doesn't have a lyric.
We don't know.
No, the
way you do it.
It's an instrumental piece, and then followed by a song. Again, we're looking for similarities between, you know, when meshing together, putting things together. Well, that all of a sudden seemed to flow naturally from that, even though they're from different time eras.
We're not sure whether Lament for Limerick had lyrics or has lyrics. We don't know. It's always been played as a slow air, as far as I know.
Yeah, there's so many
in my memory
instrumental pieces that are just that.
But somewhere down the line, you can probably say, you could guess that it probably had lyrics.
And I can certainly see the intellectual connection between these three, the Lament for Limerick in the month of January and then January's Lamentation coming back to that. Well, let's give it a listen. Yeah. These are all arrangements by Jimmy Keen, except January's Lamentation, I guess, is your composition.
Mm.
And played here by Jimmy Keen on the accordion and Pat Broders on the buzzar and also the vocal when we get to it.
And Larry Gray.
And Larry Gray is on this one as well. Yeah. Larry Gray, bass of University of Illinois faculty. And all three of them have worked together, based in Chicago, and worked together there as well in various settings. You're listening to Live and Local.
It was in the month of January, the hills were white with snow. When over hill and valley, my true love he did go. It was there I spied a pretty young maid with a salt tear in her eye. She held the baby in her arms and bitterly she did cry, saying, cruel was my father who barred the door of me, and cruel was my mother this dreadful crying to see, cruel was my own sweetheart who changed his love for gold, and cruel was the wintry wind that pierced my heart with cold. For the taller than pine tree grows, the sweeter is the bough, and the fairer that a young man speaks, the falser is his heart. For they kiss you and caress you till they think they have you won. Then they'll go away and leave you all for some other one. I'll go to the lonely valley and on my knees I'll and there unto the wintry wind for mercy I will call. She kissed her baby's cold white lips and she laid him by her side. Then she raised her eyes to heaven above and both lay down and so come all my pretty fair young maids, a warning take of me, and never try and build your nest on the top of a high tree, for the green leaves they will wither and the branches will decay, and the bushes of the false young man too soon will fade away, 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 too soon. Thank you.
will soon fade away. Too soon will fade away. Too soon will fade away.
There was a threefer, Lament for Limerick in the month of January and January's Lamentation, two arrangements of traditional tunes and song by Jimmy Keen, and then Jimmy Keen's own tune or song. You got to be careful with Irish music, because you can't just call a song a tune, because it's two different things.
Correct, yeah. Songs always lyrics, and tunes want to have lyrics, but then they know better.
And then an air is a song without words, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bohola, the name of the group who is with me here on Live and Local. They are Jimmy Keen on accordion, Pat Broders on buzar, and the vocals, and then some other guests performing here, Larry Gray playing bass on that one. This is from their self-titled CD from 2008, I think. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be playing tonight on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. The show starts at 8 o'clock, and you can get more information on the whole series by going to pipers-hut.com. The series organized by Dean Karras here in... I think all the shows are always at Urbana, Dean. You don't ever...
I have had
slide over in Champaign.
I've had house concerts in my house.
House, which is in Champaign. Dean, a whistle player and singer and Bowron player and what else?
Piper. Kaylee Snare.
More than I even knew about. And so it's a privilege to have these guys on the show with us today. Wanted to ask Jimmy about the choice of piano versus button accordion. For some reason, I always had tended to... associate Irish music with the button accordion, but
that's true for the most part. My parents tell me when I started playing when I was seven, they said that I specifically wanted to play the piano accordion. I had the opportunity to play the button accordion, but they said I didn't want that. I wanted the piano accordion. So,
and not the piano, just the piano.
Piano accordion. Oh, not the piano.
You never played the piano.
Oh no, not at all. Never. I mean, I can do little stuff on the right hand, but yeah. Just because it's laid out the same way.
You have to turn the piano open.
Upside down.
It's a little harder to carry in your pocket. Well, not in your pocket, but
it's really
in
annoying
box.
At parties when he's over the house, lifting the piano up on the side.
But it just came from a request, your own request way back when, and when
yes.
you were little. So and you don't. Do you have any recollection now why that might have been?
You know, I don't. I mean, and it's funny because there was no one actually playing. All the people in Chicago at the time that were playing Irish music were all playing, the accordion players were all playing button accordion, so.
So you were in Chicago before you actually started playing music?
I was, at seven, yes. I think it started in 1965 and around there. And we were living in Chicago at that time. And still to this day, but.
Have you for any reason ever wished that you'd gone the other way?
You know, no.
Meaning the
button. I understand. Yeah. Yes,
to the dark side.
To the dark side. You know, I messed around with the button accordion a little bit, but then I said, yeah, I much preferred the piano accordion.
It's louder.
I don't know if it's really louder, is it?
Well, it's larger. I mean, the button accordion is usually quite a bit smaller.
As I get older now, I wish I had a button accordion because it'd be easier, much easier to travel with.
I was going to ask you, if you could talk to your 7-year-old self now, what would you say to him?
I'd say, pick up singing. You don't have to carry anything, yeah? Not even a tune. Well, with auto-tuning now, you don't even need
it. We don't have one to compare it with, you know. How would you describe the differences between the sound of a button accordion and a piano accordion?
Well, physically, there is a difference. The button accordion, the piano accordion is just laid out like a piano or an organ, and on the right hand side is all the white and black keys, and on the left hand side of the piano accordion there's all the basses and chords, and because you're playing with because it's a bellow instrument, they converted the right side to buttons, and it's laid out. I think someone told me before they're laid out in fifths and thirds. For chords, The button accordion, same thing, except for each note, you get two. For each physical button, you get two different notes, depending if you're pulling or pushing the accordion. So is that called diatonic?
I've no idea.
So it's more set up like a harmonica. If you blow into a harmonica, the one hole, you'll get one note. If you draw in, you'll get another note. So that's where the button accordion is set up, or the melodeon. So 10-key or, you know, the two-row button accordion or the three-row button accordion.
Well, then as for the sound of it,
well,
you know, if I were just listening to somebody play a tune on the piano accordion and somebody else play on a button accordion, would I necessarily be able to tell that one was one and one the other?
Depends on what they were doing. A lot of times you can tell in ethnic-based music, you can tell in, you know, jazz or classical, you can't tell. Or it's harder to tell, I should say.
There's a guy I know whose name I probably won't be able to come up with because I need to, who plays jazz on the piano accordion, but he also plays Argentinian tango music on
the bandoneon.
The bandoneon,
yeah,
great instrument.
Yeah, and I won't tell you what he says about the differences because I can't actually quote it on the radio. but he had a very strong opinion one way or another. But I do remember the question about diatonic versus non-diatonic, and I guess there's differences in the bandoneon, which is a form of melodeon, I guess.
Isn't that like a big concertina?
A big concertina.
Concertina, that's right? The word. Yeah, and I guess some of them. There's no particular rhyme or reason to which pitch it plays when you suck the air in versus blow it out. Therefore, he said it makes it incredibly hard to learn. He said sometimes he can't even figure out how to play a scale on it for the same reason. Maybe that's a good reason to do the piano accordion.
Well, I think the button accordion, at least what they use within Irish music, is... yeah, it's set up because each row is a key in and of itself. So the most common type of button accordions are C sharp D. So the outside row is all in C sharp, and the inside row is in D, and which Jackie Daly plays, who was here. I'm not sure if he was here with Dean
within
a couple
the
years
last,
ago.
Last year, 2 years,
about two
years ago.
And then the other most popular style is called BC, which Patty O'Brien from up in originally from Offaly, now living in St. Paul. Or is he in St. Paul or Minneapolis?
Yeah, St. Paul.
Yeah, St. Paul is BC, so the outside row is in B and the inside row is in C. So you can imagine playing a melodeon, just a 10-key single melodeon, or what they might use in a Cajun accordion, because usually there's only one row and they're either in a certain key, so it's D or F or G.
Well, a Cajun accordion is a whole nother looking instrument.
They're really close, yeah.
It's just the way they have them voiced.
It's just the voicing, yeah. And then... instead of actually having couplers on the side, they have stops on the top, yeah. And they're slightly smaller, but it's basically the same principle.
Which some accordions, Irish accordions, are starting to they do that as well. They put the couplers on a pull thing on the top too.
And all that does is close off. There's usually three sets of reeds within the accordion and the button accordion, and there's a low reed, a middle, and a high. And by
you have combinations of all
by
three.
Combinations of pulling up or down the stoppers, you can. Have a couple of voices going at the same time.
This is where we need a TV show.
So exactly, yes.
With a bunch of these, and you can have little
They should have one on the accordions where it just turns them all off.
A lot of people would agree with you there.
Like the ripcord and the parachute.
We've mentioned a bunch of different names of musicians, some of whom have been on this Piper's Hut series over the number of years that it's been going on, but also a lot of them in Chicago. You guys both in Chicago have been for a long time. And as I'm reading the bios for both of you, you've played with this person, that person, and so on. And I'm just kind of curious, what are some of the best gatherings of Chicago musicians that you've been part of?
Catskills, 19... when was that? No, 2000 something, wasn't it? Remember we were all out there. They had the Chicago Week at the Catskills.
Oh, maybe 2008, was it?
Was that 2008
or 2009?
So that was absolutely memorable for so many reasons. It was great fun. Because they had everybody from Chicago in the Catskills.
And there's a huge Chicago musical community.
There is, yes.
Irish musical community, traditional Irish.
Liz Carroll, Jimmy, myself, Kevin Henry, Noel Royce...
John Williams,
everybody was out there. Anybody who was playing in Chicago was out there. It was great fun. Marty Fahey.
Yeah.
the Canadians. Wasn't Pauline out there?
No, not that time.
Not that time.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago has always been a... historically, it's been like the second largest concentration of Irish people in the States. I mean, the first being, obviously, the whole corridor from New York up to Boston, Chicago second, Cleveland third, Detroit, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So historically, I mean, most of the Irish music that we play today was actually collected in Chicago at the turn of the previous century by a man named Francis O'Neill and who ended up becoming chief of police of Chicago from 1902 to 1907, and his sergeant by the name same last name O'Neill, but James O'Neill, who did almost all the transcriptions in the several volumes he put out in Irish music. The biggest one was called The Dance Music of Ireland,
which had to be returned from the printer because there was something wrong with the actual print job. That they returned every copy of it was all wrong.
But his largest collection had 1,850 tunes, airs, songs without the lyrics, and all forms of dance tunes, jigs, reels, hornpipes, slip jigs, single jigs, set dances, marches.
Plus there was wax cylinders as well. There was recordings of a lot of this stuff too.
Not included with the book, but...
You know. Not included with the book, no, but he did collection of the audio as well.
And you're working on a book of tunes.
Well, you know, I mean, over the years I've been kind of writing tunes here and there, and in fact it was Liz Carroll said, hey, Jimmy, why don't you do a book of your tunes? So I'm in the process of doing that now. It'll be heavy on the audio component.
And there'll be pictures.
And pictures. Yeah. Plenty of pictures. And cartoons.
You should have some photographs in there.
Great. Well, yeah.
And when can we expect this out?
Oh, sometime. Sometime this century.
Sometime around the time your next recording comes out, whenever that might be. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you guys on here. Jimmy Keane and Pat Broders are Bohola. They're going to be playing tonight at 8 o'clock on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center on South Broadway Avenue in downtown Urbana. That's the former post office building adjacent to Lincoln Square Mall. You can get more information on the series by going to pipers-hut.com. And I know, Jimmy, you've got a website, which is...
Well, we can go Bohola.com, Bohola.com, and there's PatBroders.com and JimmyKeane.com, so you can get us
easy,
either way.
Easy to find. Well, a couple of announcements, and then we'll go out with as many as of the tunes as we can. Maybe we'll only get one tune in from this next set, but I do need to say that today's broadcast on Live and Local is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. Some other things you can go see and hear tonight if you don't care to go to hear Bohola.
I don't know why.
For those who must have their jazz, the Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble is at the Iron Post in Urbana. It's tonight at 7. Jeff Arrigo and Cody and the Getaway Drugs are at Clark Bar in Champaign at 6:30. There, you could do both of those easily. Jammy Jim and Bean and Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience, are at Bentley's Pub in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. It's David Howie and his live jukebox show at El Toro in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6:30. And the traditional Irish music session tomorrow evening at 8:30 at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign, led by Jake Schumacher, formerly of WILL, and I know is good friends of these gentlemen as well. Eric Lund's Jazz Friends Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. And it's the Starlight Ball, music by Captains 3 at the CRIS Healthy Aging Center in Danville tomorrow evening at 6:30. This is Live and Local. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Thanks very much to Jimmy Keane and Pat Broders.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
And have a lot of fun at the performance tonight. Mm-hmm. This set begins with Tom Ashe from Bohola's self-titled CD. We'll see how far we get on Live and Local.
The red sun rolled down over Bali. misty and grey. And at home on the mainland, our wives and our daughters are wishing good luck on the day. With the west wind long blowing, our nets overflowing, and a shoal that broke under our lee. And we'll rise high course, Kilmore lies before us, with a boat full of spoil from the sea. The winds from the northland are cruel and smiting, and the young lambs are scarce can be saved. But the winds from the eastland are callous and blating, and adds a full foot to the waves. Oh, sweet west wind singing, the seagulls are winging, as a hooker that skims light and free. And we'll rise high course, the waves lie before us, with a boat full of spoil from the sea. The winds from the southland are soft and beguiling, and quickens the seed we have set. But the winds from the westland are soothing and brightens, and brings on the fish to the net. Then it's oh for the west wind, it's oh for the best wind, and we'll save all poor fishers from three. And we'll rise high course, the waves lie before us, with a boat full of spoil from the sea. Fill fair on the sail, and the moors safely guide her, one more tack and we'll make for pier. See my Eileen and Margaret, and Stassa beside her, may I ever come home safe to thee. Oh, sweet queen of heaven, let my prayers be given to the babe once set upon me.